You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. Support for the Radio Cafe comes in part from the Lannan Foundation, presenting a reading and conversation by Nora Ericott with Janine Jackson on Wednesday, December 4th at 7 p.m. at the Lenzig Performing Arts Center. Nora Ericott is a human rights attorney whose book, Justice for Some, Law and the Question of Palestine, offers a new approach to understanding the Palestinian struggle for freedom told through the power and control of international law. Tickets available at the Lenzig or lenzig.org or call 505-988-1234. The Radio Cafe is brought to you by the Santa Fe Institute, a world-renowned research hub offering free online courses in the science of complex systems. Check out their community lecture series and summer science festival in Santa Fe. More at santafe.edu. And ladies and gentlemen, today's program is about Thanksgiving dinner, and I'd like to welcome Natalie Bovis. New to the Radio Cafe, she's a mixologist and author. She produces a culinary and mixology festival here in Santa Fe, and you can find her at theliquidmuse.com, and really very much involved in kind of the culinary scene of Santa Fe. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So Thanksgiving dinner. Is this one of your favorite holidays by any chance, or what do you think about Thanksgiving?
Well, you and I were talking earlier before the show about how both of us have parents from other countries. Your mom is from Germany. My parents are from England and France. So it's kind of funny, I think, growing up in America and having Thanksgiving be part of like your and my upbringing, which was not part of our parents' upbringing. It's obviously an American holiday. What I love about Thanksgiving is taking a moment to stop and show gratitude. I think that gratitude is the key to happiness in general. I think it's the key to success in general. I think gratitude kind of bleeds over into so many parts of being in relationship, being in business, being part of a family, being a happy person. So I love sitting around a table with friends or family and sort of taking a moment together to be thankful. So in my world, it's kind of more about that than it is about pilgrims or anything else, you know, which isn't so much a part of my personal world.
Or the very checkered history that is the United States
of
America.
Well, and there's that, yes. Right. Yeah, I didn't want to go there, but yes, that
well,
too.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because coming from, as you and I both do, you know, my parents and grandparents and yours as well, an immigrant background, Thanksgiving, like, I don't think my parents really figured out what Thanksgiving was. You know, we certainly didn't celebrate it, and it didn't have that sort of grandma's apple pie feel to it. And
not at all.
And all of that. Yeah. But at the same time, there are some beautiful traditions, starting with turkey. And it's funny too, ladies and gentlemen, Natalie and I were talking before the show, and neither of us eats turkey dinner anymore. How come you don't do turkey dinner?
Well, you know, I am very involved with animal advocacy. And part of my festival, the opening party is called Taco Wars. And Taco Wars is a really fun party that it sells out every year, and it's just a blast. And I donate 20% of the ticket sales to the Santa Fe Animal Shelter from Taco Wars. Throughout my life, I've always been someone who advocates for animals. And there was a certain point several years back when I just looked at myself and said, why are you trying so hard to save cats and dogs, and yet you're eating pigs and cows? Like, why? Like, where's the disconnect here? And so I stopped eating anything that had fur on it first. And then that is spilling over into fowl. And I'm sure eventually I'll give up fish too. I kind of am struggling with that because sushi.
I hear you.
And I'm a very selfish person in that way. But, you know, I'm trying to at least, you know, I'll have a little duck or a little turkey or a little chicken once in a blue moon. But I really am trying to be a lot more plant-based in my diet so that I'm living in harmony with my convictions about animals.
And from my end, I'm very much of an omnivore, although I'm trying to eat only regeneratively produced and organically produced and humanely produced meats, which it takes a certain amount of planning and looking around and seeing and sometimes mail ordering things and stuff like that. But I don't eat turkey because my significant other is allergic to it. So
well, there goes that.
So there goes that. But I have cooked many a turkey in my life, as have you. And I think it's important to talk about the cooking of a turkey. And one of the things that is of paramount importance is to get a good turkey, probably to order in advance if you possibly can. If there's an heirloom turkey available, those are a bit more expensive, but they're really good. And get that and make sure it's not frozen by Thanksgiving morning when you
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Get ready.
Definitely defrost it. Yeah. Well, when I used to cook turkey, I used a tip from my mom that she learned somewhere about cooking the turkey upside down. So instead of having it sitting with the breast part up, I'd flip it over and cook it that way. And one of the reasons why is because the darker meat is a bit fattier and juicier. And so those juices will run down and just keep the breast meat really, really moist. And then what typically I would do is like the last, you know, leave it that way for however many hours, depending on the size of the turkey. And then at the last, flip it back over and then cook it with the breast side up for like the last maybe 45 minutes so that the breast skin on top could get nice and crispy. I also used to wrap the turkey with bacon, like I'd put bacon all over it.
I've done that too.
Isn't that delicious?
It's so good. And you baste it and the nice oils go all over the turkey.
Yeah.
If I may ask, how do you turn a big heavy turkey over? Like, do you use like asbestos gloves?
Yeah, I would put on gloves. Gloves and just
like heating, like what do you call them?
Like
potholder gloves.
Yeah, like oven mitt gloves.
Okay.
There's oven mitt gloves that have fingers in them too. So those are a little bit easier. But yeah, just pick it up and then you, because those turkeys are big. So trying to do it with a fork or something, forget about it.
Right.
You know, you need to just get clean, you know, or get like if your oven mitts aren't that clean, then get like at least a clean towel to put on each side so you can pick up this big hot bird and turn it upside down.
And flip it over. And so be careful when you do this, ladies and gentlemen. But it does sound like a good idea. And I do hope to cook a turkey again someday and I will try it.
Yeah. Well, and here in New Mexico, you know, another thing I used to do with the turkey was I would get red chili powder and rub it into the skin before cooking it so that would kind of soak in. And that's so delicious, I will say.
That's nice. And, and you can also do that with different kinds of herbs too.
Of course. You can do it with anything. You can do it with lavender. You can do it with herb de Provence mix. You can do it with whatever. But with the red chili and you rub it in the skin and get it really, you know, nicely coated, like, you know, really get that turkey well coated in the red chili powder before cooking it. And then it just makes the skin spicy crispy and it is very delicious.
What about stuffing? There's many, many different kinds of stuffing. The traditional involves cutting up bread or using little bread crumbs or bread cubes. You can also do it with rice or wild rice or brown rice. What are some of your favorites?
Yeah, well, obviously I put green chili in my stuffing. You know, I grew up in Santa Fe, so like there is no holiday meal without some form of chili in the cocktails and in the food. I'm not kidding.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But my mom always did a really lovely oyster stuffing, and that was delicious. She would get, you know, if she didn't have fresh oysters, you know, accessible, she would get those jars of oysters. I always really loved her stuffing. And then she would, of course, use breadcrumbs in that and season it really nicely with a lot of Italian herbs. That was the way she did hers. I never made the oyster stuffing myself. That was always my mom's thing, and I loved having that. For me, I did experiment a little bit with quinoa and green chili, and I like to put nuts in the stuffing. I like texture and crunch. I hate soggy stuffing. I think that's, you know, when it's too soggy and greasy, and I don't know. That's just not my bag. I like texture because you have this nice, moist, juicy meat, hopefully, if you've cooked the turkey well, slowly, and upside down, and then to have a stuffing that has the crunch of nuts and the spice of green chili, and you know, quinoa has that nuttiness to it. I think it could be great to throw a little brown rice into there too for people that do want a little bit heartier stuffing. But people who are doing like keto or paleo or, you know, whatever kind of eating plan they might be doing, gluten-free, you know, the quinoa is a really great option.
There's a wild rice mix that has wild rice and other kinds of rice and other little grains in it. I think it's at Trader Joe's. And I've used that and cooked it just barely, you know, like not fully, but basically cooked it. And then you add in like celery, raw Ooh, carrots.
Yeah.
And then some herbs and then always some bourbon or some
nice.
Or some rum
yeah.
or some other kind of liquor uh-huh. that kind of evaporates and diffuses into the flavor of the stuffing and also into the turkey.
Right.
But gives it a nice little flavor.
Definitely. I mean, alcohol is great for cooking with, just like wine. You know,
yeah.
people are used to cooking with wine, and cooking with alcohol is always fun because it gives a little bit of a different flavor and the alcohol cooks off.
Right. Brandy, that was the other one.
Ooh.
It's good.
That would be delicious.
Yeah,
Brandy
yeah.
would be delicious.
So then you cook your turkey and it never takes as long as you think it's going to. So these people who say, oh, I have to get up at 4 a.m. to get the thing in the oven. No, you don't.
Yeah, especially not if you have a normal sized turkey. Maybe,
exactly.
Maybe they have very, very big turkeys.
Very, very big. Maybe. But even then, I mean,
yeah.
Here's my recipe. Sleep in.
Right. It's Thanksgiving.
It's a day off. Maybe you even have Friday off. Then get up and in the fullness of time, and you might have gotten some of the ingredients in ready the day before. You can get a whole bunch of stuff
key.
Ready the day before.
Are you kidding? I think if you're entertaining for Thanksgiving, it is absolutely crucial to prepare as much as possible the day before so that you're just spending a few hours day of, because to start that whole ordeal morning of, oh my Lord.
That's what I do.
Wow. That's,
I mean, I do my preparation the day before is shopping. And one of the things that's really been nice, at least in Santa Fe, I don't know how it is in other cities, but I have found that, you know, Smith's and these big supermarkets, they just hire enough cashiers to have every single aisle manned with somebody to check you out. And they, you know, have enough brown sugar to sink the Titanic.
Right.
And so, you know, it's not like you go there on the day before Thanksgiving on the Wednesday and the shelves are empty.
Right.
There's
no.
enough.
Yeah.
There's enough food and yeah. there's enough people to so that you're not waiting in line for 17 hours.
Oh, yeah. No, but I like to do as much chop and prep as I can the day before a big, you know, I don't have a big family here. Clearly, I don't have relatives in America. So, you know, it's really just my mom and me that live here.
Right.
So unless I'm having a bunch of friends over, which 9 times out of 10, I don't on Thanksgiving because people have their own families to go to. When I was married, I'd go to my in-laws. But I do like entertaining a lot, and I entertain often, and I have dinner parties often, and I have big parties once in a while. And so whenever I entertain, I just prepare as much as I can the day before. Things like chopping celery, you can do the day before and
right.
just keep it in a little container or whatever, you know, just so that you're not having to do every single thing that day.
And when you do get up and you start chopping and you take your pre-chopped things out and you start getting ready, one thing that's really nice to do is have your music prepared.
Yes.
And ladies and gentlemen, you must listen to, if you haven't already, Arlo Guthrie's Alice's Restaurant. And if you haven't heard of it, look it up on YouTube and listen to the whole thing. And it's great to listen to because it's a Thanksgiving song, but it's a lot of other things too, while doing your food prep. What do you, like, okay, so you're going to, let's say you're going to have some people over, whether it's 2 people or 10 people, besides having the main dish and the side dishes, which we'll talk about, it's nice to have some kind of appetizers.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think are some good things kind of while you're waiting for the turkey to cook?
Yeah, you know, people always do cheese and crackers, and there's nothing wrong with that. I like cheese as much as the next person, but I really prefer doing it kind of the French way and having cheese, you know, after the main course. And so now if someone brings cheese and crackers and they want to add it to the appetizer table, I'm not going to turn that away. I mean, people do what they do. But I think that one of the things we can all borrow from French culture about not having the cheese beforehand is that if you think about it, think about the progression of digestion, think about the progression of a meal, right? So anything, just like with cocktails, an apéritif, which is served before the meal, is to open the appetite. If you come in with a cocktail, like a dessert cocktail, as an apéritif, you're kind of already messing up your palate a little bit. Dessert cocktail would be something that's creamy or, you know, like really sweet or that kind of thing as a dessert cocktail. If you have that before the dinner, you know, it coats your tongue, your palate isn't as ready. So you have an aperitif, a light, refreshing sort of, it could be like bubbly champagne. It could be maybe a little gin martini. It could be something like that that's kind of cleaning your mouth, preparing it to eat. So if you translate that to food, what I love is very light appetizers, little finger foods. Like, for example, if you get like endive leaves, and then you break it apart, and then you might put like a little bit of caviar in there, or you might put a little, if you eat meat, little squidge of pate in there, or you might put, you know, maybe a little ratatouille, you know, a little bit of vegetarian vegetable thing in there. Those little boats, those little endive leaves are such wonderful vessels in place of crackers. Again, so many people at the holidays are trying to watch their weight, watch their calories, and not overindulge. So using them as little kind of boats, as little vessels to eat something tasty and light, I think is really nice. Having something like a little poached salmon on crackers, or something that is not going to wipe out your taste buds, in other words. Nothing overly creamy or overly spicy or overly heavy.
And so what about the drink part of it, both the alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so you want to start a meal with something, like I said, an aperitif that opens the palate. So you want to be thinking light. So you have things like Lillet, which is a very nice aperitif. I like it as an aperitif. It's a fortified wine. A little bit sweet, but not cloyingly so. In Europe, for example, people will drink vermouth before the dinner, dry vermouth, just dry vermouth on ice. I love that as an opening to a meal. One note on vermouth, a lot of people might have a bottle of vermouth in their closet somewhere in the way in the back and think that's like some disgusting vinegary tasting thing. Well, let me just say, if you have vermouth in your house, it needs to be refrigerated once you open it. And you can't open it and shove it up in a closet and keep it up there for 5 years and then think it's going to taste good.
It's gone bad.
Yeah, vermouth is a fortified wine. So would you do that with a wine? Of course not. The wine will be vinegar by that point. So just keep in mind, if you have vermouth, just kind of a side note here. If you have vermouth in your house, open it, keep it in the fridge. It'll keep a few weeks maybe, but then don't stick it in the closet because it'll go bad.
Or drink the whole thing with your friends.
Or drink the whole thing with your friends because it goes down very easily and it's not as strong as regular alcohol. A little stronger than wine. But yeah, so something like, you know, sparkling drinks are wonderful before a meal. You know, little champagne or maybe a French 75, which is a champagne cocktail. Maybe a glass of champagne with a few dashes of bitters. That's, you know, also very nice for preparing the mouth and digestion.
And the proverbial apple cider. But what I do is, if I'm drinking it cold, put some soda water in it.
Oh, that would be apple such cider a great spritzer. Non-alcoholic. Yeah, that'd be a great non-alcoholic aperitif.
So, okay, we've got some little endive boats and we have our alcoholic or non-alcoholic pre-dinner cocktails. And then the turkey is ready. And if you're a vegetarian, if you don't want turkey, we're going to have some alternatives as well. But let's say the turkey is ready. What side dishes are your favorite? I mean, there's the traditional sweet potato, which you can make in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. What else?
I love green beans, another traditional one. See, I like my sweet potatoes without the marshmallows. I don't like that all over there.
Yes.
Because that's too much.
Is that like a sign of our un-Americanness?
Probably. It's like, I mean, I love that for dessert. Like sweet potatoes with marshmallows for dessert, great. It's like a marshmallow pie. But don't like it with the turkey. That's weird. Yeah, I like green beans. I love You know, I love stuffing again. You know, I love, but I don't like the soggy stuffing. I like the crunchy, nutty rice or alternative. What else? I really do love sweet potatoes. Oh, you know what I love what some people do is those scalloped potatoes, real cheesy scalloped potatoes. I don't do a lot of animal products, but I do still do a little cheese.
Cheese is so good. And I think, you know, whether you're on a keto or paleo, as people are talking about, or a low-calorie diet or any of that kind of stuff, on Thanksgiving, kind of put it aside.
Yeah.
It's possible
don't
to
count
eat
calories. That's
do
sad.
Do not count calories on Thanksgiving.
No.
Don't even try. It'll make you miserable.
Oh, God. Yeah. I think that's really unfortunate when people are that obsessed that they would count calories on Thanksgiving, for sure. What are some of your favorite side dishes for Thanksgiving?
Well, they've always said, don't have salad on Thanksgiving. But
really?
I actually like a little bit of salad on Thanksgiving.
My God, you need it.
And there's things that you can put on salads. I once was reading a copy of, I think it was Gourmet Magazine or one of those magazines. And they had a salad and it was, I still remember it. It was so good. It was arugula, radicchio, crumbled feta cheese, and chopped up dates.
Ooh.
And that was the whole salad.
Beautiful.
And then you serve it with a dressing of olive oil and lemon juice and salt and pepper.
Oh,
and that's it. It
that's
was the
gorgeous.
Simplest thing. I ate it because I just made the recipe. And I thought, this is why they pay these chefs the big money. Because they take a bunch of fairly simple ingredients, put them together, and it's so much bigger than
sense.
The sum of its parts.
Totally. Well, and you know what I love about that salad? You know, back to like the cocktail analogy, a cocktail needs to be balanced. If it's too sweet, it's not good. If it's too tart, it's not good. If it's too strong, it's not good. It needs to be balanced. I think that same analogy can be applied to an entire meal.
Right.
So like that salad that you're describing is so clean and fresh. And, you know, I think that's such a great balance to some of the richer, you know, meats and dishes and other things that we have on the table.
But it still has the dates.
Oh, but the dates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think that's so cool. Well, and also with the radicchio and the arugula, there's some nice bitterness in there. So that kind of bitterness with the sour of the lemon that you mentioned and then the dates, it sounds perfect.
It's a good salad. And I think it's important to have some of that kind of bitter green of one kind or another so that you don't go into a coma.
Totally. Oh, my gosh. Well, and also I feel like it's almost like a built-in palate cleanser so you can keep tasting the richer things. Because if you just have like rich and greasy, rich and greasy, rich and greasy, you almost don't taste it anymore because your tongue's so coated with it.
Right.
So like, you know, having a salad like that, I think would help someone enjoy the meal more.
You can also make a lot of different things with squash and all the different kinds of
squash.
And they make great side dishes.
Yeah.
And squash is also a main ingredient for those who want to have a vegetarian Thanksgiving.
Right. So on that note, I guess we're kind of leading into some of the things that I'm really excited about making on Thanksgiving these days, which is, so I sent you over some recipes, which you may or may not want to share on your website, but.
Oh, I'll put them there.
Oh, okay, great.
Radiocafe.org and click on New Mexican and you'll find it. Click on our site, you can find the recipe.
Perfect. I'm going to put that link on my website, The Liquid Muse, as well, so that people can find them there. But last year, I went to Nepal, which was a lifelong dream of mine. And when I travel, I travel quite a lot. That's like one of the things I live for is traveling. I work to travel. And so whenever I go somewhere, especially somewhere exotic like that, I always take cooking classes. And so I took a fascinating cooking class in the town of Pokhara. And it was really crazy because just a little side story that'll kind of lead into the recipes I shared with you. I was in this little town and asked, where would I find a cooking school? And the town's relatively touristy. It's where people start the Annapurna mountain hiking circuit. So there's a lot of backpackers and stuff. And there didn't seem to be a cooking school there. So the hotel I was at, the manager there, called up the manager, his buddy, of their hospitality school, where they train people to work in restaurants and hotels. And they got a couple of the students who were studying to be chefs to teach me this private class on a Saturday afternoon, you know. And so for them, it was kind of, I guess, fun to, like, you know, they're students normally, so they got to be the teachers. For me, I was just out of my mind excited because I got this private class with these lovely young people. My teacher was like 21, you know, and his teacher was there supervising him. So it was a really fun experience. And so in that class, I learned to make the traditional Nepalese dal bhat, which is kind of like their farmer's plate. And Chef Johnny V, who introduced you and me, has Las Cosas Cooking School here in Santa Fe, and he let me come and teach. After I learned, I then turned around when I came home and taught the dal bhat class to people here in Santa Fe. But anyway, so back to the Thanksgiving, when we were talking about Thanksgiving dishes, I took some of those recipes and I tweaked them, adjusted a few things, made them my own, and turned them into a vegetarian Thanksgiving dinner. And so butter rice was one of the things that we learned. Obviously very simple. It's a rice made with ghee and whatnot. And so I added in some pine nuts and sage and dried cranberries or currants, you know, to make the rice kind of Thanksgiving ghee, you know.
Right.
And then I took the vegetarian curry that we learned in this class, and I added some pumpkin and added a few more kind of like Americanized ingredients into that curry. And I think that could be a really interesting sort of, you know, main dish for vegetarian people. In addition to pumpkin, obviously you can add acorn squash or butternut squash. I mean, it could be a variety of squash in there. But I thought that was kind of a fun idea. You know, again, kind of back to like our origin stories, you and me, you know, bringing different cultures into a quintessentially American holiday, I think only enhances it. I think it makes it kind of, you know, a bit more memorable, something different. And both of those things I mentioned would be great side dishes on a table with a turkey as well.
Very much so. And you've reminded me that we haven't talked about cranberry sauce,
right?
Which is very important to have out there, and lots of ways to make it. But I tend to gravitate toward the keep it simple. Sometimes you mix in some oranges, pieces of orange. Sometimes you just take it out of the can, warm it up.
Right. I like to cook the cranberries, and I like to grate orange zest into it.
Yes, very much.
And I also like to grate a little fresh ginger.
Ooh.
Yeah. That gives a really nice little zing.
Very interesting.
And ginger and orange and cranberry together are really awesome, both in the cranberry sauce and in cocktails. I have a cocktail that's those exact flavors.
Okay, so let's talk about that. What are some of the drinks that you recommend to eat with Thanksgiving dinner, both with the vegetarian kind of Thanksgiving dinner and with the turkey base?
Yeah. Well, so here's one of the fun things about pairing cocktails to food. I love wine with food. I love wine by itself. So I'm not saying instead of wine, this can be in addition to wine. But I love that with a cocktail, we can really customize every flavor and ingredient in that cocktail to fit our meal. And so when I'm teaching my cocktail classes, I love, you know, helping people think about cocktails in a very culinary way. If you go to the farmer's market on a Saturday morning and you buy five things, you can certainly, I'm assuming, using all of those five things in your dinner, you can probably use at least four of the five in your cocktail. And so,
okay, hang on. Bok choy, arugula, kimchi. No.
Yeah.
What?
Of course.
Okay.
You can use anything in cocktails. Lay
it on us.
So, for example, well, those three ingredients are going to be a little bit tricky, but are you asking me, are you giving me a challenge here?
No, I'm not.
Okay, because I was gonna go there. But
Because
basil.
A kimchi cocktail, I'm sorry. Nobody should have to drink that.
Yeah, with the kimchi, I would be probably, I have seen people try to do that, actually. And some have failed miserably. And some have made it really interesting. I think that with kimchi, it would be the astringent part of a certain kind of cocktail. So that would be like, instead of using a lemon juice, or instead of, it'd be like the acidic element, you know. But then we're getting totally off topic, and that's a talk for another time.
Pairings.
So like I just mentioned in the cranberry sauce, one thing I think is really helpful for group entertaining is pre-batch your cocktail or make it into a punch. Because even at my own parties, I don't make individual cocktails for people. I do not want to bartend my own party. So if I do serve cocktails, I batch everything ahead of time. So that said, the cranberry sauce cocktail individual one would be like 1.5 ounces of either gin, which I really love with things like turkey with fowl. Or if people aren't gin fans, it could be with vodka. So it'd be like 1.5 ounces of that. It'd be about 1 ounce of cranberry juice, maybe 3/4 ounce of an orange liqueur. I would grate some fresh ginger in there. I would squeeze 1/2 lemon, which is about 3/4 ounce of lemon. 1/2 lemon is about that much. And if you want it sweeter, you could add like 1 bar spoon or 1 teaspoon of agave nectar into that. Shake it up with ice, and there you have a really pretty cocktail. Garnish that with maybe some orange rind or some candied ginger on a toothpick, or, you know, you can get creative. When you're garnishing a cocktail, be thinking about what's in the glass. The garnish should be kind of an indicator or an aromatic clue as to what you're about to taste.
Can you put a cranberry on the end of the toothpick kind of thing?
You could. If it's cooked and tasty, for pure decor, you could put a cranberry on it. I like to have garnishes that smell nice and taste nice. You could do, I mean, you can get as creative as you want to. That's what's so much fun about cocktails. Once you kind of learn the ratios, you know, of a balanced drink, then you can get creative. But the recipe I just described, translate ounces to cups. And that'll more or less work to turn it into a punch. If I were turning it into a punch, I'd go a little heavier on the cranberry juice. And I would probably also add a little bit of cinnamon to it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And if you're doing a punch, a nice thing if you have citrus in the punch is, you know, to slice some thin slices of lemon or thin slices of orange and float them on top of the punch. Or even better, if you have ice sphere molds, the ice ball molds, you can cut thin slices of lemon or orange, put them inside the ice sphere mold, and then instead of filling it up with water, which will dilute your punch, fill it up with cranberry juice or fill it up with, you know, maybe a mixture of like 1/2 cranberry, 1/2 orange or something like that. So that.
And you have these ice balls.
Right.
Juice ice balls.
So that as they melt, they continue flavoring the drink. And they also are decorating the drink because they have little bursts of color in there.
And if you don't have one of those spheres, could you use just an ice tray?
Of course. Absolutely. You can use an ice tray. I'm not a believer in making people run out and buy a bunch of stuff. You can use whatever you have handy. You can get a little paper cup if you have little paper cups at home. Or a paper cup would be easier than a regular cup because you want to get the ice out of there. But if you had little paper cups and you froze some orange juice, some cranberry juice, or some lemonade or whatever, and then when it's time to serve, you can just peel the cup off, throw that away, and then plop them in the punch, and they can be different colored.
Nice.
Ones. Yeah.
And so people can take a ladle and basically spoon themselves whatever they want to during the course of dinner.
Exactly. And another tip on that is if the punch isn't cold enough, you know, like with all of that we just described, and you want to serve it over ice, then don't put a bunch of ice into the punch because that'll just water it down. Have the ice separate and then get your punch cup or glass or whatever. Put the ice in the glass and then ladle the punch on top of it. Don't put a bunch of ice in the punch.
Very nice. These are all things that can also be done without alcohol.
Of course.
For the kids and for the non-drinking adults.
Always. Yes, absolutely. I love mocktails. I've written 3 cocktail books, and of them, my non-alcoholic one is the most popular, which is really funny because I work with liquor so much.
Is that the one called Pregatini for pregnant
mothers? Yeah, Pregatini's Mixology for the Mom-to-Be.
Nice.
That one is the one that came out in 2008 and to this day sells more than the other liquor-laden ones. So, you know, clearly there's, and now more than ever, there's such a trend toward being healthier, less alcohol, driving home safely. As a host, you want to always have some appealing non-alcoholic options because you're being thoughtful and getting your friends home alive and saving them a DUI and saving your own liability.
Some years ago, I was watching a documentary about the evils of plastic bottles and how they're polluting the world. And so I immediately bought one of those home water fizzers. Mm-hmm. And so I fizz my own water at an extremely high rate and drink it all day long. And that's something that you can mix with almost anything.
Of course. And flavor. Yeah, of course. Oh, that's so easy. Absolutely.
So, okay, we've gotten through our appetizers, our aperitifs, our dinner with side dishes and maybe salad, maybe not, and drinks with dinner, and now we're heading toward dessert. And I have to say, this is the one place where I have become Americanized, which is the apple pie.
Oh, yeah.
It's important to make an apple pie.
Of course.
And in this altitude, it's also important to either use softer apples or to sort of steam your apples ever so slightly before you put them in the pie, because otherwise they never really fully cook because we're at 7,000 feet.
Right.
So that's an important thing. And it's harder to make a good pie here. There's a wonderful book called Pie in the Sky, which is about high altitude baking.
Yes.
And it's a great reference book and has wonderful recipes and ideas and sort of the science of high altitude baking in it. So highly recommended to compensate for, and especially when you're using hard fruits that have to cook down, they never quite get to a hot enough boiling point. But that is easily rectified, and making a nice pie crust, I mean, really old school with Crisco. You know, but you can use butter. There's other things you can use too, or you can use a combination. But it's such a delicious pie crust. And I'm finding that you can sort of get away with gluten-free flour.
Yeah, I've been experimenting with those.
What have you found?
It's been a little challenging, but I think I need to experiment further. I'm learning, but I will say, I mean, I haven't found anything that's quite the same as using wheat flour. That's not to say that those don't exist. It's just to say that I personally have not honed my skills to the point where something is the same. But it's been fun. I've coconut flour, almond flour, chickpea flour. I bought a whole bunch of different kinds of flour just because I want to play with them and really try to learn.
One of the things that I've also found for the apples, and I've always thought of this as a deep secret, except I've said it on the radio so many times that I don't think it's a secret anymore. And I'm also not the only one who's thought of it. But while you're peeling and chopping up your apples, you put them in a bowl and you pour some rum and brandy over the apples and let them sit in that while you're making the pie crust. And during the time it takes to make the pie crust, the apples will have absorbed that.
Mm.
And the flavor of the pie is infinitely better. And then, of course, you've got your brown sugar and your cinnamon and your butter and whatever else you put in with the apples inside the crust. And then you've got a little bit of stuff left over in the bottom of the rum and brandy apple bowl, which you can surreptitiously put in a shot glass and drink it down.
Right, I would, before a party.
Or maybe in one of your punches.
You could add it to a punch, but I think you should keep it for yourself. That sounds delicious. I think the cook deserves a little treat.
A little treat. And then I also think that when you, and there's so many different pies that you can make, as soon as you take the turkey out of the oven, put the pie in, and, you know, it's done by the time you're ready for dessert.
Right, and hot and steamy. Have you ever put red or green chili in your pies?
Okay, talk about that. No.
What? Oh, okay. Green chili and pinon nuts added to an apple pie is, again, a very Santa Fe sort of slant to things. And a little bit of red chili. I mean, Christmas apple pie.
How much do you put in?
Oh, I would put, I guess, like a tablespoon.
Are you talking powder or are you talking about actual chili?
No, the green chili, I would put the actual chopped green chilies. And of that, I would put at least 2 tablespoons.
And mix it in with the apples.
Mix it in with the apples and the pinon nuts, pine nuts as well.
I wonder if it also goes with the rum and brandy.
Oh, definitely.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Can't cancel that.
And that, no, that would be it. And then maybe put a little, put maybe 3/4 of red chili powder.
Okay.
And cook that up.
Do you put that in your pumpkin pie as well?
Red chili, not green.
Right.
Green and pumpkin, no.
No.
But not in a pie. Red chili in the pumpkin pie.
What about pecan pie?
That's red chili too. That's not green. Green only works with the apple pie.
red chili.
Or maybe rhubarb. It might work with rhubarb pie. I haven't tried that, but that might be good.
Red chili pecan pie does sound good.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then we have come to the end of our Thanksgiving dinner. Now, you were talking about how, according to your French heritage, you kind of eat your cheese and certain things that some Americans eat before the meal, after the meal. Do you have anything after Thanksgiving dinner, or are you just kind of ready to fall asleep on the couch?
Well, the cheese would come after the main course and before the pie. That's where the cheese would be inserted. You know, and the thing about the cheese, like I was saying about, you know, as an aperitif, the reason why it wouldn't go as an appetizer in France anyway, I'm not saying that no one should do this or it's a cardinal sin because I love cheese. I eat it all the time. But it's because, again, the fattiness, it's fatty and creamy and it kind of, you know, disrupts the palate. But after that meal, having a little, and, you know, another thing too, in France anyway, since we're talking about that, the salad comes at the end of the meal too.
That's right.
You know.
Which I like.
Before or during. Again, it's that palate cleansing. So it would be like appetizers, main course, salad, clean the palate, cheese to sort of rich it up again, I guess. And then dessert. You know, that's sort of the order in which it would go. So that I love stretching out a holiday meal.
And yet the French are so slim.
Well, because it's also portion control. Their portions are nothing like our portions.
Right.
I mean, we all eat. I mean, you're very slim, but speaking for myself and most Americans, we all eat more than we're supposed to. You know, it's portions are very different in Europe, which I'm sure you've seen as well.
Yeah, it's interesting and it's important to think about. And on Thanksgiving, I think on Thanksgiving, the thing is, and sometimes, you know, you'll go to a potluck and so everybody will bring something and hopefully there's not like, you know, 17 dishes of sweet potatoes and no turkey. You know,
right.
The host or hostess has to kind of figure that out. But sometimes there's so many, or somebody will just really go wild on the cooking. That wouldn't be I. And there's so much that you kind of have to do portion control so that you have a little bit of everything.
Yeah. I think that's the key to these big holiday meals is enjoy everything. Don't, you know, oh, I don't eat this, I don't eat that, if it's something that you really want. But just have a little bit because, you know, there's a lot of delicious things and we should all enjoy those. But I'm over the days of stuffing myself to where I just feel sick afterwards. Like, that's not fun anymore. I can't sleep. I'm at the age now where, like, too much wine or being too full and then I can't sleep. And I'm like, oh, it's not worth it. And that's kind of great because it has forced me to think about portion control during the meal. So I eat everything that appeals to me. But I'm really being a lot more conscious about portion control.
And then there is that which we have to be sure to say when we're talking about all these delicious drinks with dinner. Don't drink and drive.
No, gosh. That's why we have Uber and Lyft.
And designated drivers.
And designated drivers. And self-control. A drink or two during a big meal over several hours is, you know, not necessarily a hazard. But more than that, definitely is. So, like you say, I mean, taking those precautions.
What time do you like to actually serve Thanksgiving dinner?
Early. Later than 3 or 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not later than 3
or
4.
Yeah, I don't think of, I don't, yeah. I mean, to me, 2... Yeah. As an arrival time.
Yeah.
Is
right,
good. And
right.
Then you sort of hang out in the kitchen.
Right.
And talk and chat and
right.
Get your little drinks on. And
yes.
Then pretty soon the table will be set. Do you decorate your table?
I love decorating for entertaining. So I do, you know, candles are a must. Not scented candles on the table because then you just like smell vanilla the whole time you're trying to smell the food. You know, I'm a big secondhand shopper. I am fanatic about collecting vintage cocktail glasses. Obviously, that's right up my alley. I have tons of them, way too many. And I love vintage serving ware. I have like this green glass scalloped bowl with feet, you know, footed, that I use for salads. It looks like it's right out of Mad Men or something, you know. So I think it adds so much character to a table if you go thrift shopping and just find some really cool old pieces that, you know, would be from the 50s, 60s, 70s. I guess 80s is vintage now, which makes me feel old. But,
right.
You know, yeah, I love that. I think that that's really charming and hip, you know, and
Do you have any favorite places in Santa Fe that you like to go?
Oh, I have so many favorite places in Santa Fe. But this Thanksgiving, actually, my mom and I decided that we're not going to cook and we don't want to go to a home or whatever. We're going to treat ourselves, and we're going to the Inn of the Anasazi for Chef Peter O'Brien's Thanksgiving offerings. Those look pretty great. But I was just at Coyote Cafe the other day, and that's always a hit. I mean, love Coyote. It's just such a special occasion restaurant anytime you walk in the door.
And that's one of the things that we haven't mentioned, is that for those of you who have heard all this and you really don't want to cook, wonderful restaurants that are open on Thanksgiving and making terrific meals.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a huge list of favorites in town. I mean, I love Joseph's. I love Paloma. I love Four Seasons. I love Aloysa. I mean, La Fonda. I just go on and on. I mean, we're so spoiled in this town with incredible chefs, you know, and then we have all the breweries and there, you know, like Rowley's has a great chef. And, you know, we have so many different kinds of places. We have such an incredible selection of restaurants. We're truly blessed.
And if you want to go vintage shopping for some of your decorations for the tables, I love to go to Valdez. I guess it's called Art and Antiques now on Early Street.
Yeah, that's a cool place.
They have wonderful, crazy stuff. You always go in there and find some
smorgasbord of cool stuff.
Strange, beautiful
things. Did you see all the Fred Harvey things they had there recently? That was really neat. Yeah, and I love the ones that support the animal shelters. So the Cat, they have one location on Cordova and one location on Sirius Road, and all that money goes to the Santa Fe Animal Shelter. And then the Barkin Boutique down next to Ginger, that one supports the Española shelter. So I like to try to support those as much as possible. And I found some of my best finds at both Barkin Boutique and the Cat.
Natalie Bovis is a mixologist and author. You can find out more about her at theliquidmuse.com. Thanksgiving dinner. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Funding learning initiatives and community programs, visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. And many thanks to the Lanl Foundation for support of the Radio Cafe.